All right, so this is about 2:31, and it is September 16th, and we're in the middle of the appendicular skeleton. All right, so try to recall what the appendicular skeleton is again. The bones of the upper appendages and the lower appendages plus the girdles. What are the two girdles that we're interested in? The pectoral girdle, and remember, to girdle is to surround something. And so the clavicle and the scapula of the pectoral girdle kind of surround your upper thoracic cage, right? And the pelvic girdle surrounds what? The pelvic girdle surrounds the pelvic cavity, right? And the pelvic girdle is made up of two bones, a right and a left os coxae. And during development, it actually starts out as three separate bones. This is kind of coming back to me. I don't know if I lectured about this last time or not. But the os coxae make up the hip bones. All right, and the three bones that the os coxae develop from are the ilium, the ischium, and the one that's anterior, this is the pubis. So you should know that an os coxae is made up of an ilium, ischium, and pubis that has fused together to form one bone. Now what we see right here, this is a little bit confusing, what we see right here is a pelvis, and the pelvis is made up partly of the appendicular skeleton, namely the os coxae, plus the sacrum and the coccyx. But the sacrum and the coccyx explicitly belong to what part of your skeleton? Is it appendicular or axial skeleton? It's really the axial skeleton, right? So the sacrum and the coccyx are really part of the vertebral column. So that's really your part of your axial skeleton. All right, so it could be just a little bit confusing in this regard. Okay, so what can we say about the pelvis right here? Well, let's just take a look at the os coxae. All right, so here are some coxal bones. And these in lab, make sure you spend some time with these. Pick one up, and when you first look at it, it's just going to be a confusing mess. And how do you straighten out in your mind this confusing mess that you have in your hands? You have to realize what the superior part of the bone is, what the inferior part is, and maybe what the anterior part of the bone is. And when you know what's on top, what's on bottom, what's in the front, right, model it on your body. Just hold it up to your body the way it's supposed to fit and just look at the pieces, right? And then you should be able to recognize that bone when you just see it laying on the table, because you'll be able to recognize some landmarks. All right, so, and which is really hard to see on a two-dimensional figure. So let's take a look. Besides the superior and inferior part of a bone, you could also look for landmarks that are medial or lateral. Those are also sometimes very nice things to start with. And here is a big socket. It's a depression. This is similar to the glenoid cavity of the scapula. And this is the socket that's going to articulate with the bone of the thigh, which is the bone that we're going to talk about next. What's the bone in the thigh? That's the femur. All right, so it's a ball and socket joint. The head of the femur fits into this socket we call the acetabulum. And where do you think the acetabulum is? Medial or lateral?
Lateral.
Got to be lateral, right? So that's a really easy landmark to see. Okay, another landmark is this huge, fan-shaped, massive bone structure right here. This is the superior part of an os coxae. This is what's making up part, or comes from the ilium. Right, that's going to be superior as opposed to the inferior part over here, which is what we call the ischium. So in order to get started, find the acetabulum. Number two, find the ilium, and in particular, this iliac crest. This is the iliac crest right here. And the iliac crest is a process. It's a raised area. It's very rough. So what's the function of the iliac crest? Because it's a process, you're just immediately going to say without thinking, muscle attachment, right? And we'll fill some of those pieces in a little bit when we get to muscles. All right, so you know the lateral side. You know the superior side. you need one more side to know how to hold that bone up to your body, and that is, how about if we find something that's anterior? All right, and the anterior aspect, all right, we can see a little bit better here when we look at the pelvis. This bone right here is called the pubic bone. So the pubic bone, this bone that makes a nice 90-degree angle right here, that's the pubis. So now you can take that ascoxae and model it on your body and figure out exactly how it sits. All right, so we got superior, anterior, and lateral. So if we were to take this bone, how are you looking at that? On the left-hand side, right, how would that fit? On the left-hand side, it would fit just on your body just like this. And the one on the other side would fit like this. All right, so make sure you place it on your body to figure out these different sides. Okay, so here you can see the two pubic bones with a nice pubic symphysis between them. And that's a nice fibrocartilage. And that joint is usually immobile, all right, but it can move around a little bit due to trauma. And also due to parturition. During parturition, what's parturition? Yeah, when somebody's delivering a baby, that joint dissolves away so that the two pubic bones can separate, and that enlarges what? The birth canal. Right? And even in guys, this thing can separate. But that's quite abnormal circumstance. Like, for instance, if you're in a motorcycle accident and you go through the handlebars, that thing can separate, right? So, but that's okay because it can heal. It goes back together again, mostly, right? The hips mostly go back to their original location, but not exactly. Okay. So here you can see the acetabula laterally. We can see the iliac crest superior and the pubic bones, what are anterior. So you know how to position this bone in your body. All right, so now you got to learn some features of this particular bone. We see a number of bumps. Let's look at this side right here. And here I see the pubic bone. And is this anterior or posterior? That's going to be the anterior side, right? And here I see some processes sticking off, and they're sticking off of what side again? The anterior side. And these two bumps are on what bone that make up an ascoxae? It's the ilium, right? So here to me it kind of looks yellow. The ilium is yellow, is that right? No. What color is that? Yellow. Yeah, it's yellow. Okay. And this kind of looks gray or blue to me. Purple. Yeah, okay. Same color. All right, so that's the ischium. And then the pubis kind of looks red. What is that, red? Okay. So we got we've got yellow and purple and red right here. Those are the three bones, and you can see where those margins are. And where do these three bones fuse together? Where is one spot where there's a common joint between all three? Right within the acetabulum. So in lab, pick up a real acetabulum and see if you can find these lines of fusion and where they meet right in this depression right here. All right. So this is the anterior side, and we're looking at the ilium. So how would we name this process? Well, it's what on the anterior side, right? It's also superior, and it's on the ilium, so we call this the anterior superior iliac spine. There's another bump right below it. What bone is that on? It's still on the ilium, right? And it's still on the anterior side of the ilium, but it's no longer in a superior position. It's in the inferior position, so we call this the anterior inferior iliac spine. What's the function of this anterior inferior iliac spine? What's the function of it? Well, what is a spine? What's a general classification for a spine? It's a process. Right? A spine is just a process. So what's the function of the anterior inferior iliac spine? Muscle attachment. Yeah, very important to know. All right, so those are two important bumps that you should know about. All right, so let's go over the iliac crest. All right, so where is my cursor proceeding? It's moving posteriorly, right? It's moving to the posterior, what part of the ascoxae? Posterior, what bone is this here? Ilium, so now we're in the posterior ilium. And again, I see two bumps on the posterior side of the ilium. Here's this Here's the posterior superior iliac crest, and here's the posterior inferior iliac spine. All right, spine and spine for both of them. All right, what's the function of these two spines right here? Muscle attachment, right? They're just processes. All right, so those are pretty easy to see as long as you know to look for the anterior part of the ascoxa is made up of the pubic bone right here. All right, then we get down into this notch right here. This is a big, huge notch, greater sciatic notch. And then here's a little lesser sciatic notch. Now, what side of the bone are these sciatic notches on? What side of the ascoxa? They're going to be on the posterior side. And in between them is an ischial spine. All right, and that's also important for muscle attachment, right? Muscle attachment. And that's on what? The posterior part of the ascoxa. All right, so if we look, let's go back to this slide right here. Okay, I can see, all right, so here's the anterior ilium. So here would be the anterior superior iliac spine, anterior inferior iliac spine, and then way back down over here, this thing poking out, part of the ischium, but it's posterior. This is the ischial spine corresponding to this thing right here. All right, so that's going to be important when we, for instance, if anybody is going to have a baby. Why is that? Well, we need to maximize this distance here between the ischial spines to enlarge the birth canal. All right, so I don't know if you've ever noticed this, but the male pelvis is a lot different than the female pelvis. Okay? And the reason is why? Because of childbirth. There has to be a big difference, right? So the female pelvis is not quite as tall, but it's wider. There's a bigger distance between these ischial spines in the female, right? And that just aids in delivery of a baby, right? So take a look at these two landmarks right here. It's pretty important. All right, I'll mention that once again. So that's this thing right here. All right, well, what else do we have? We have a very rough bony prominence on the inferior part of, so what bone is this right here? It's a posterior plus inferior bone of the ascoxa. That's the ischium, okay? This is the ischial tuberosity. Guess what the function of this ischial tuberosity is? It's going to be muscle attachment. Very powerful muscles for standing erect. And as a matter of fact, this is the bone that we are all, except for me because I'm standing, this is the bone that you all are sitting on right now. Okay? And so you have some soft tissues like muscles and nerves and blood vessels right here. And when you compress those soft tissues, blood can't get into them. Right? Blood is not strong enough. So when you're sitting in your chair, you're not like hopping up and down. Right? That blood isn't getting to that part of your body. You're squishing those tissues. And when a tissue is not perfused, if perfusion is cut off, if blood supply is cut off from a particular tissue, we say it becomes ischemic. All right, that tissue becomes ischemic when it runs out of blood supply. So when somebody's having a heart attack and blood doesn't get to the heart, what do we say about the heart? It becomes ischemic, right? But if something's ischemic, as soon as it's reperfused, it can come back to life and function. It's not really dead. But if there's a tissue that's ischemic and then it dies, then what do we call that? Well, I don't think anybody really knows, so that's why I'm mentioning it. It becomes necrotic. So there's a big difference between ischemic and necrotic. Necrotic really means dead, right? So if something's ever becomes necrotic because it doesn't have blood flow, is it ever going to come back to life? No. When something's dead, right, it's dead. So ischemia sometimes we can deal with, but necrosis we can't really do much about. All right? So that's why this is called the ischium. Because when you sit on your backside, that cuts off blood to those tissues that are underneath it. All right, so here is the ischial ramus. All right, because what's a ramus? It's a piece of bone that makes a 90-degree bend. All right, so here is the body of the ischium, and it makes this 90-degree bend. So this is the ischial ramus. Here is the body of the pubis right here, and it makes a 90-degree bend, so this is the pubic ramus, or ramus of the pubis. And that forms this foramen, which we call the obturator foramen in an Ascoxae. Okay, so those are some pretty important landmarks. This fan-shaped massive bony structure of the ilium, we call that the ala. And usually if in lab, I would label that on the lateral side of the bone. But if we were to look on the medial side of the bone, we would see that the ascoxae forms a bowl or a depression. So what do we call a bowl or a depression? That is a fossa, right? All right, so that's for holding your internal organs. So this makes the iliac fossa. And what else we have? We have right here, since this is the medial view, what do we have attaching to the ascoxae medially? We have the sacrum right here. All right, so here is a joint between the ilium and the sacrum. Sometimes we call that the iliosacral joint. And there is a landmark on the ilium that we call the articular surface of the ilium. Right here, that's going to articulate with what bone? What bone is this going to articulate with? The other ascoxae on the other side? No, it's going to be the sacrum right here, right? So the sacrum goes between the two ascoxae. Okay, what else do I want you to see? There is a line right here that we call the arcuate line. And if we look at a pelvis, right, I can see the arcuate line right here, and the arcuate line right through here on the ilium. And that's a line that demarcates where the true pelvis is. So anything that's inferior to, say, a plane that's going to match up to these two arcuate lines, anything that's inferior to that, organs in this cavity right here are going to be in the pelvic cavity. Right, so that's what we call the true pelvis. The false pelvis would be from a line from the top of the iliac crests down to the pubic bone. And that includes more organs, but that's what we would call the false pelvis. Right, the true pelvis is below the arcuate lines. All right, so the ascoxae probably is the most confusing bone to appreciate. And how do you get started trying to figure out what all these different bumps and processes and rough parts are again? Figure out what's the superior part, the inferior part, and anterior part, and go ahead and model it on your body and see how it fits, right? Because it's easier to picture an ascoxae when it's forming the pelvis compared to when it's just laying on a table all by itself, right? And if you can see how it fits on yourself, then it should pop into your imagination all of these different pieces of the ascoxae. Okay. Okay, next bone. Couple bones. Bones in the thigh. We have one bone in the thigh and then one bone between the thigh and the leg. And the bone of the thigh is the femur. And you got to know all these different parts of the femur for lab. This is probably an exam figure. So here is the proximal epiphysis. Here's the distal epiphysis. And here is the head of the femur. It's covered with hyaline cartilage. It's an articular surface. So the head of the femur articulates with what bone? The head of the femur articulates with the ascoxae. And as a matter of fact, what part of the ascoxae? The acetabulum, right. All right, so here's the head. Here's the fovea capitis. That's a pit in the head of the femur because there is a strong ligament that goes between the head of the femur into the acetabulum that helps stabilize the joint. All right, and that's called the ligamentum teres. I don't know if you have to know that, if that's on any of these slides. I don't think you really have to know that. But nonetheless, that is interesting for the following reason. Associated with that ligament is a blood vessel, an artery. So what can you tell me about this bone right here? What does this bone have that kind of makes it special compared to like this column that's in this room right here holding up the next floor? What's special about this femur compared to that cement pillar right there? It's alive, right? It's living tissue. So because how do you know it's alive? What's in here? There are osteocytes in there. In order for those osteocytes to stay alive, what do they need? They need oxygen and they need nutrients like glucose. And where do they get these nutrients from? From the blood, right? So for instance, if somebody damages that ligament right here and cuts off blood supply to the head of the femur, guess what happens to these cells right here? They die as a result of that. Okay, and what was that term that we used to differentiate between ischemia and actual cell death? What is cell death? That's called necrosis. Yeah, necrosis. So when that blood vessel gets damaged, the head of the femur necroses and, necroses, yeah. Okay. Ischemia, all right. Ischemic tissue. Necrosis is the process, and necrotic, sorry, would be the term, it would be the adjective, necrotic, okay, which means what? It's dead. It can't ever come back to life. Those cells are dead. Now, what happens to a bone? What is happening to a bone all the time? It's remodeling itself, right? It's breaking down and building up, breaking down and building up, but if all those cells die, right, there's nothing building bone back up once again. So the head of the femur just dissolves away. So you can imagine what that would be like to somebody's hip joint, right? It becomes basically immobile because these articular surfaces now are just big jagged edges that are grinding away the acetabulum. And that's a very significant kind of pathology. And the only way that we can really treat that is by performing a hip replacement. All right, and hip replacements actually are pretty sophisticated, very successful procedures. And as a matter of fact, I kind of think of a story of an athlete that I know. And he was such a phenomenal athlete, he played professional football and professional baseball at the same time. Well, not the same afternoon, but basically the same season. And one time when he was playing football, he got tackled so hard, it hurt his hip, and it damaged that blood vessel going into the femur. All right, and so the head of the femur became necrotic, right? It died, dissolved away. So what did he need to live a normal life again? A hip replacement. And this athlete was so phenomenal, even with a prosthetic hip, he went back and played professional baseball after that. That's amazing that somebody with an artificial joint as important as a hip could actually perform so well at that level. Does anybody know who that was? Yeah, it was Bo Jackson. Okay, so he never went and played football again. I think he kind of learned that he didn't want to give away his other hip, but that's just amazing to me, right? So I'm sure it helps, you know, if you're going to earn $1 million a baseball game or something, that even with an artificial hip, you'd find a way to play, right? So, but nonetheless, he was still just one amazing athlete. All right, so that's a little bit of a story about bones and how you have to just treat your bones right to maintain the health of them and that they indeed can die and then that causes problems. All right, so if this is the head, here's a little bit narrowing distal to the head. What do we call that on any bone? That's the neck. And then we see some big bony prominences, right? And these are sort of similar to what we see in the humerus, but these are bigger and more massive, meaning they have bigger and stronger muscles attached to them. So here we have the greater trochanter and the lesser trochanter. We're going to learn some muscles that attach to these. And on the posterior side, we have a line that connects the two trochanters. We call this the intertrochanteric crest. This is a little bit more prominent compared to on the anterior side, we have the intertrochanteric line. It's not quite as prominent. But in any case, these are all processes, so What's the function of the intertrochanteric crest? That's a muscle attachment. And what about the intertrochanteric line? That's for muscle attachment, right? So these are all for muscle attachment. All right, and then we have the diaphysis of the femur. On the anterior side, there's nothing really too remarkable about it, but if we look on the posterior side, what do we see right here? We see the linea aspera, right? And if you palpate this in lab, you'll notice that it is a raised, rough surface, right? So what's the function of the linea aspera? Muscle attachment. Yeah, it's going to be muscle attachment. I don't think you have to know any of these other little minor structures here, like the supracondylar lines, okay? But you do have to know something about the linea aspera. So now we're down in this region right here. What is this called right here? Of the femur. What region of the femur is this? That is distal. I like that so far. Distal what? Yeah, epiphysis, distal epiphysis. All right, so here is the anterior side, and this is the patellar surface. It's covered with hyaline cartilage. It's an articular surface that's going to articulate with your kneecap bone, and the kneecap bone is called the patella, right? And on the posterior side of the patella, you'll see that there is an articular surface, and that's going to rub up against the patellar surface of the femur right here. That's going to be covered with hyaline cartilage. And you can palpate the little facets on this, okay, of the patella. And the patella is roughly triangular in shape. The inferior part is what we call the apex of the patella. The superior part would be what we call the base of the patella. And the anterior side is going to be very, very rough. The posterior side is going to be very, very smooth because that makes up the joint. The anterior side is very rough because why do you have a rough spot on a bone ever? For muscle attachment, right? So there's going to be some very powerful muscles of the thigh, anterior thigh, that attach to the patella right here. Okay. These smooth articular surfaces on the posterior and inferior side of the femur, these are what we call the condylar surfaces. They're covered with hyaline cartilage. And they're going to articulate with the bones down in the leg. Okay, so this is what we call the lateral condyle, and this is the medial condyle. Now, how would you know that this is a lateral condyle? How are you going to figure that out during a test? Okay, because it's opposite the head, because the head has got to be what? Medial. All right, so that's a perfect way to always learn anatomy, by making association to other structures. And as a matter of fact, that probably could be said about any kind of learning process. Any kind of learning process is just by making connections with something that you already know, right? And what's the easiest thing to know about the femur? I'll look at the head sticking out medially here. All right, so here we have the lateral epicondyle, the lateral condyle. So over here has got to be the medial condyle. And then there's a notch or a fossa between them, and that's just the condylar fossa. Okay. All right. Then we have a bump above the condyles, and we call these epicondyles. And so guess what the function of these epicondyles are? It's a rough raised area. It's a muscle attachment. Yeah, it's for muscle attachment. All right. So that's pretty much it for the femur. Okay. So you might be wondering, how on earth, okay, am I going to practice all of these different namings of the bone, etc., etc.? Okay. Well, one good thing is to use the study guide, right, and print out the figure and just practice labeling. All right, but I've also been developing some online content, not for this class in particular, but for a hybrid anatomy class. All right, and I'm thinking about activating some parts of that class for all my non-online classes, like all of you guys in here. All right, so these are things that you don't have to do. All right, so maybe over the weekend or before the weekend, for instance, I'll activate some of these things. So it's going to be in weekly assignments, for instance. All right, so that you'll have the same internet access and can practice labeling some of these things. Like, what would you like to practice labeling right here? A humerus or a scapula? Oh, scapula is not bad. Okay. All right, so for instance, you have medial border. All right, and that's going to be on a scapula. So where's the medial border of the scapula? Is it going to be over here? No, because here's the glenoid cavity. Glenoid cavity has got to be lateral. So I would say probably the medial border is this thing right here. So just drag and drop this thing, and if we get it right, okay, we'll probably get some kind of pleasure response, and if we put it in there wrong, then we get electric shock or something. I'm not sure. So what do you say? Should I drop it right here? You're ready for electric shock? Okay. Ah, okay, good. That wasn't bad. Medial border. What about glenoid cavity? How about right here? Okay. So you can just practice these things, right? Acromion process, the superior border, the suprascapular notch, subscapular fossa. All right, so is this a posterior or anterior part of the scapula? That is the anterior part. That's the part you can't really see or palpate. All right, the coracoid process. Something looks like a bird's beak is right here. And then, of course, that's not too hard to figure out. Lateral border is right there. And guess what you can do? You can take this as many times as you want until you can do it in, say, I don't know, 3 seconds? 5 seconds, something like that. And then when it comes time for a practicum, you're going to be really good. All right, how about something a little bit tougher? How about an ascoxae, something we just went over? Oh, my God. Okay, let's get going with this. What three bones do you see right here? The ilium. Ah, here's the key. The ischium and the pubis. This is the superior part. This is the inferior part of the ascoxae, and the pubis is what part? The anterior. All right, so if this is anterior, guess what this has got to be here? Anterior, superior, iliac, spine. Is there such a thing? Yeah, of ilium. How about this? Ready for a shock? No, okay, good. Obturator foramen. That's easy. Body of the ilium. Probably here. Ooh, body of ilium. Here. No. No. Here. Ah, here. Okay. Posterior. No, I don't want to do that one. Let's do. Oh, it's not labeled. I wanted to do this one. Not labeled. Okay, let's do this one. Posterior superior spine. Okay. Iliac crest. That's easy. Spine of the ischium. Now, this one confuses students a lot, so I'm glad it's here. All right, it's not going to be up on the ilium anywhere, because what does it say? It says ischium. So here is the ischium here. Here is the spine. All right, body of ischium. Probably this is it. Inferior gluteal line. Oh, you guys don't have to know that. Body of the pubis. Right here, you got to know that. Greater sciatic notch, you got to know that. Okay, so every once in a while, it contains a few structures you don't have to know, but just look at your figures in your book or your lab list that you have for lab and just ignore that point, right? So you should know what you have to know. Okay, so you can practice all of these things, all right? But I have even more things here, more exercises. Got some animations, little videos you can look at. There's some more animated activities in here. All right, so these are just additional things that you could do if you want to take some multiple choice question tests. Right now, this won't count toward your grade, but you can answer some of these things, perhaps, to help review. All right, the appendicular skeleton comprises all of the following except what? Appendicular. Bones of the upper limb, is that true? Yes, that's true. Thoracic cage and vertebral column, is that true? No, so I don't like that one so far. What about pectoral and pelvic girdles? That's true. Bones of the lower limb? Yeah, that's true. So I like B as a correct answer, right? So you can answer these questions and then get some feedback. And how did we do? Ah, we got 100%. That's fantastic. All right, so right, if you really want to hone your skills, I'll enable this stuff. But remember that this is not going to count toward your grade. And you might find it helpful, you might not find it helpful. So it depends on how much time you have to study. Okay? And then you should give me some feedback if you like it or not.
Okay.
I'll try to get it there maybe at least by Saturday afternoon. Okay. And the links are, they're activated within Blackboard. And it's going to take you outside of Blackboard. And sometimes they open on a separate page, and sometimes they open within this window right here. So all you have to do is just click on these links right here. Okay.
And what section are you going to put them on?
I'm going to probably call it weekly assignments, or I'm not sure exactly what I'm going to say yet, but probably I'll call it maybe weekly assignments. Yeah, way in the back.
Did you pass the sign
in? No, I didn't. I got to get it out. Yeah, let me get that out. Okay. So you'll find all kinds of other good stuff and work through them. My guess is if you work through all of this stuff, I can't imagine not getting 100% on a test or a practicum if you do that. But what's the downside? Well, it takes time to go through that material, right? So I'm certainly not going to force anybody to do that. But it's available for you. All right, what's the next bone that we want to be interested in? What's below the femur? We've got bones of the leg. And how many bones do we have in the leg? Yeah, we got two, right? Okay, so what are the bones of the leg? Go ahead, the tibia and fibula. Go ahead, put the date on this before you circulate it around, okay? The date is the 16th. All right, so sign it fast and pass it around. All right, so next bones. All right, we're down here in the leg, still appendicular skeleton. The two bones are the tibia and the fibula. And the lateral bone is the fibula. The medial bone is the tibia. And you can palpate your leg, and you can feel a bone in it. All right, right on the anterior side, and that is the tibia. As a matter of fact, that's the anterior border of the tibia, and commonly we call that the shin bone, and so when you bang your shin on something, it's not protected by a bunch of muscle, you get a little contusion of the bone, and that is what? The anterior border of the tibia that you're smashing, unfortunately. Okay, that's the one that you can palpate. The other one, you can't feel. That's the fibula. It's buried, it's too deep to too many muscles for you to palpate. All right, so let's look at the tibia. The proximal part of the tibia has some smooth articulating surfaces right here that articulate with the condyles of the femur, and these actually are called condyles of the tibia. All right, so here's the lateral condyle, here's the medial condyle, and you see a ridge between them. That's an intercondylar eminence. And we're going to see how important that is in stabilizing the knee when it works when we get into joints in the next chapter. On the anterior side of the tibia, right here, there's going to be a rough raised area. This is what we call the tibial tuberosity. Guess what the function of tibial tuberosity is? Muscle attachment. Right on. Okay, then we got the diaphysis. And then in the distal epiphysis of the tibia, we have this bump right here that we call a malleolus. And these things make up your ankle, right? So these things you can palpate on your ankles, on either side of your ankle. The medial one is on the tibia. The lateral malleolus, or ankle bone, is on the fibula. All right, so you notice when we put a fibula and tibia together, it forms this little notch right here. That's very important because that notch is going to accommodate a bone of the ankle. And I'll show you what bone that is in just a little bit. It's going to fit right up in this little notch. But the fibula and the tibia have to fit together just perfectly in order to form this little notch. Here's the shaft of the fibula. And then there's a joint. There's a tibiofibular joint, so there is an articular surface on the lateral side of the tibia and the head of the fibula right here. So again, in lab, you should be able to palpate that surface. That should be very easy to palpate. All right, so that's pretty much it, I think, for the tibia and fibula. The bone that fits right between the tibia and fibula of the leg is called the talus. All right, so just like in the... How many bones did I want you to know for the wrist? Anybody remember how many bones? You should probably know that there are 8 bones that make up the wrist, and in general, what do we call a bone that's a wrist bone? That's a carpal, right? And as a matter of fact, there was one carpal that I wanted you to know something about, and that was the scaphoid. And the scaphoid articulates with the radius, it touches the radius, and that's one that can be damaged pretty easily when you apply an axial compression to your arm, right? That's the scaphoid is one that can break pretty easily. All right, so again, I'm not going to ask you to name all of the bones of the ankle, but I want to double the number that you have to know, from 1 and 2, 2. So you got to know the names of 2 bones of the ankle. First off, the bones of the ankle are not called carpals, they're called tarsals, right? And the 2 that I want you to know, the first one makes up the heel, that's the calcaneus, and the second one makes up the joint with the tibia and fibula, so it's important, and we call that the talus. So the 2 I want you to know are the talus and the calcaneus. Okay, so here you can see them here and here. All the rest are tarsals. And let's see, what else do I want you to know? Well, I guess these are the only pictures that we got. Do I have another picture of a foot? Nope, not really. Okay. Well, just like in the hand, right, where you have wrist bones, hand bones, and then bones that make up digits. In the foot, you have ankle bones, you have foot bones, and bones that make up the digits. And they're named pretty much the same way. Starting, so in the hand, right, we number the bones of the hand, starting with 1, and you end up at 5, right? You go 1 through 5. And they're called metacarpals in the hand, but in the foot, they're called metatarsals, all right? But we don't have a thumb in the foot. You've got a big toe, great toe. We call that the great toe. And so that's 1. So the metatarsals are numbered 1 through 5. So the first metatarsal is medial, right? And the 5th metatarsal is lateral. So always think of anatomic position. So where I have the cursor, which one is, what bone is this right here? If you had to label that one on a practical exam, that would be number three, metatarsal. All right, now let's pick this bone right here. Okay, now what can you tell me about, what's a general name for this bone right here? It's a phalanx. Right, because it's making up a digit. So a phalanx is either a finger or a toe. Doesn't matter. It's just kind of a generic name. And which one is it?
The middle.
Okay, it's a middle phalanx, but what digit? 5, 4, 3, 2. Because here is the great toe right here. Okay. And as a matter of fact, ooh, it's a little bit funny to look. Oh, here, this is even a better picture. So let's go up to the superior picture right here. Here's the first metatarsal. And just like in the thumb, right, you have a 1 proximal phalanx and a 1 distal. There is no middle phalanx in the first digit. Whether it's the foot or the hand, it doesn't matter, right? It's just missing. But all the rest have what? Proximal, middle, and distal phalanx, whether it's in the foot or the hand. Okay? All right, so that's really, really easy, but I know a lot of students to mix that up somehow on a test. So, I don't know. How am I making it confusing? Is that easy to see? You start counting from what? Your thumb or your big toe. And, right, don't mix up a metatarsal with a phalanx. And the first digit doesn't have a middle phalanx. Okay. All right, so that's all pretty easy to appreciate. Okay, how about another interactive exercise? This you might find good as well. How about femur? And the femur, what should we do? Anterior proximal? Sure, why not? Now this is going to be, is this a broken link? Nah, here it is. Okay, a little bit different exercise. All right, so read the question. Where's the question? Name structure A. What is A? That's the head. Do we have an answer that looks like that? Oh, and it tells you right away. Immediate feedback. I didn't warn you, okay? All right, next question. Name structure B. What's B? Okay, I would say greater trochanter. This looks like lesser trochanter. Do we have greater trochanter? Right here. Well, let's see what bad happens if we answer it wrong. Is anybody wired? Ah, sorry, try again. That wasn't so bad. Okay. All right, so greater trochanter. Ah, very good. So you get a little bit of feedback. Okay. How about one more? Next question. C. Ooh, what does that look like? Intertrochanteric line. Next question. D. Lesser, right? Lesser trochanter. So you can click through these things pretty fast. E. Looks like neck to me. Okay? So you might find this helpful or maybe too tedious. I'm not sure. Just let me know. All right? Okay, so you can work through all of those. And let's see, what do I have in number 8? Broken link? No. Skull. Do you guys want to know anything about the skull? What are you going to say? Well, yeah, you got to know a lot about the skull. This is a little bit different exercise. If you hover over something like this, what does that look like to you? A mandible. And if you click on it, I believe it should tell you what it is. Mandible. And if I hover over this thing, that is the mental foramen. And you can double check by clicking. Mental foramen. What about this thing right here? Okay, yeah, it's on the vomer, but I see it highlighted, this whole thing in this region here. So it's actually the vomer plus the perpendicular plate of the ethmoid. That would be just called the nasal septum. But if it was just the lower bone, you'd be 100% correct. So let's see if it says vomer or nasal septum. All right, nasal septum. And this, inferior nasal concha. All right, what about this? Infraorbital foramen. Got it. Do we have something like that? Yeah. Right? The superior orbital fissure. Inferior orbital fissure. So hopefully you find this stuff fun and something that you can work through pretty quick. Okay? All right. Now some of these, so how do I go back? Some of these, you know, like this is not quite so important for lab, the inferior view. So you have to use a little discretion as to which ones are helpful for you or not. Okay, but these are all good to work through. Okay, and then I think that was the last page. Okay. All right, so I'll have to clean it up a little bit because for my online class, I actually have them submit things to me, but I won't have you submit anything. It's just there because you can have free access to it to help prepare for a test. And if it looks really confusing, just don't use it. Okay? Use your textbook and the study guide. Because where does a test really come from? Your study guide. Right? So this will just reinforce the study guide. All right? That's the most important thing. Okay. All right, so who's got some questions about the skeleton? Appendicular skeleton, axial skeleton, bone, tissues. Any questions on that? No? Okay. Well, I think I'm going to move on to the next chapter, which is probably the hardest chapter of the bones to appreciate, and that's joints, because it actually incorporates a lot of function, right? Because what do you do with a joint? You just don't sit there and watch it. You actually use them all the time, right? So if you're using a part of your body, that has to do with function. And understanding function sometimes is a little bit more complicated than just appreciating structure. So, at least in my world, understanding physiology or function is a little bit more difficult than just memorizing structures of things. All right, so let's get started talking about joints. All right, so what's another name for a joint? Another name for a joint is articulation. So an articulation is where two bones come together, but they maybe move with respect to each other. So we need to classify joints. And we can classify joints based on two different kinds of ideas. The first way that we can classify a joint is by a structural classification. Like, what is the shape? What makes up a particular kind of joint? All right, is it made out of fibers? Take a guess what kind of fiber would be in a joint if it's a fibrous joint. It would be like collagen, right? And if it's a cartilaginous joint, it should have cartilage, right, in there. And then the next kind of joint, which is a really special joint, that's a synovial joint. And that has a whole number of different kinds of structures that we're going to look at. Okay. The interesting thing about synovial joints is that the synovial joint is really the only kind of joint that is what we call freely movable. So, for instance, your elbow joint, guess what kind of joint that is? Is it fibrous? Is it cartilaginous? Or is it synovial? Okay, and synovial is really the only movable kind. All right, so that's a synovial joint. So, not only should we know classification of joints by how they're made or what they're made out of, but also by their function. How much motion is allowed between different kinds of joints. So the terminology gets a little bit more complex. We have a synarthrosis. All right, so guess what arthrosis means? That means it's a joint, right? And synarthrosis is an immovable joint. And a really good example of an immovable joint is sutures, all the joints between the flat bones of your head. Those hardly move at all. As a matter of fact, if I look at all of you here, I probably couldn't find anybody in the room whose head is actually moving. Okay? But certain people are trained to feel that very subtle motion, like people trained in cranial sacral manipulation. They can palpate and find some small motion in these bones and use it for diagnostic and treatment purposes. But in general, you can't tell, right, just by looking at somebody. Movement in these sutures. There's another kind of joint called an amphiarthrosis. These are slightly movable joints. For instance, the joints at the intervertebral discs. So you can turn around and look at somebody if you're careful, right? And you can bend your vertebral column a little bit anterior and posterior because there's very slight motion between the intervertebral bodies or the vertebral bodies, and those are what we would call amphiarthroses, slightly movable. And then the last kind is a diarthrosis. These are kinds of joints that are freely movable. And a good example, well, we just mentioned, is the elbow. But could anybody else give me another name of a joint that is a diarthrosis?
The knee.
I think I'm going deaf, unfortunately. Your wrist. Yeah. Yeah, wrist. Okay. Your knees. Okay, your shoulder joint, your hip joint are all diarthrosis because they're freely movable. All right, so let's look at joints, in particular fibrous joints. And so what kind of classification is fibrous joint? That is a structural classification. It's based on the structure of a kind of joint. And we mentioned what? What was the first kind? A suture, right? All right, so these are, by function, immovable. All right, so if it's immovable, what kind of joint is it by a functional classification? It's a synarthrosis. All right, so sutures is a kind of structural classification, but because it's immovable, we know that it's what? A synarthrosis. So you might be wondering, how am I going to remember? Synarthrosis is immovable, amphi is slightly movable, and diarthrosis is freely movable. Well, take the first letter, right, of each of these words right here, and what does it spell out? Sad. Okay? That might help you. As long as you remember, you start with what kind of joint? Immovable. So S, right, immovable. And then in the middle is slightly, and then the D is freely movable. So that might help you remember which one goes where, okay? Okay. All right, so what does a suture look like? Guess where I got to go? I got to go up over here. Fibrous joint. All right, so here we see a suture. And so by function, what kind of joint is a suture? Remember, SAD, it's a synarthrosis, but it's also a fibrous joint. And here you can see the collagen fibers, right? It's just dense, regular connective tissue in there. Okay. All right, another kind is a syndesmosis. And here we can see the tibiofibular ligament that holds in the proper approximation the distal part of the tibia and fibula right here. All right. Again, that's an immovable fibrous joint. All right, but we call that a syndesmosis. Where are we at right here? Okay. So they're connected exclusively by ligaments, and the amount of movement varies from no movement, and maybe some could be freely movable depending on the length of the ligaments. All right, okay, but the distal tibiofibular is immovable. But another kind of syndesmosis, like the radial ulnar interosseous membrane, is a diarthrosis. So let me see if I can go back and find that one. Where is that diarthrosis at? Radius and ulna. Ah, all right, so here's the radius, here's the ulna, and here is that interosseous membrane, and that's a freely movable fibrous joint, because what can you do with your hand starting in anatomic position? You can actually move your hand so that your palms face posteriorly. And when that happens, right, it would be really nice to have an animation or a skeleton in lab, but what bone is going to be in my forearm here? The radius, right, because it's going to line up with the thumb, and here is the ulna. But when I move my hand posteriorly, look what happens to my thumb. It moves medially. So actually, the distal part of the radius has to do what? It has to cross over the ulna, right? So the radius crosses over the ulna, so that interosseous membrane has to be freely movable so that you can undergo this motion, right? And we're going to talk about what this motion is in just a little bit. We're going to talk about it in this chapter, okay? Okay. Another kind of fibrous joint. And this is what we call a gomphosis. So here is, let's just say this is a mandible, okay, or it could be a maxilla. And then here is a pit in the mandible. What do we call this hole in the mandible or this pit right here? This is the alveolus. This is an alveolus, and it's going to accommodate the root of a tooth. All right, so this kind of joint is what we call a peg and socket, and that's a gomphosis. So there are ligaments that hold your teeth into this alveolar socket right here, this alveolus. And what can you tell me, what kind of joint by function is a gomphosis? Should this tooth be moving around very much? No. So what kind is that? That's going to be what, an S, an A, or a D? It's going to be an S, right? So that's a synarthrosis. So that's another kind of synarthrosis. All right, so peg and socket joint for tooth attachment. And that ligament is called the periodontal ligament. Peri just means around. And dontal or dentitia or dentin or any of that kind of term should give you an image of what? A tooth, right? Okay, so that's a synarthrosis as well. All right, fibrous joint. Another classification, what did we have? Cartilaginous, right, versus synovial. All right, so we're on cartilaginous joints. We see a couple kinds of cartilaginous joints, a synchondrosis, right, where bones are united by hyaline cartilage. They're immovable, so that would be a synarthrosis. Good examples of this would be the epiphyseal plate or epiphyseal disc when a bone is still growing in length. Can you remember where the epiphyseal plate is? I don't know if I have a picture of that anymore. Do I have? Oh, yeah, here's a good picture. All right, here's the epiphyseal plate. This kind of looks, I don't know, maybe like the head of the humerus as it's growing or something right here. Okay, so that would be achondrosis. And here's another one between the first rib and the, oh, what bone is this right here? So that's part of the sternum, but the superior bone is the manubrium. Okay. Okay, and a symphysis is a cartilaginous joint, but it's a fibrocartilage. All right, it's slightly movable. So by a functional classification, what's a slightly movable? That's the A in SAD. That's an amphiarthrosis. And a good example of that, okay, would be what, this intervertebral disc right here. Okay. As well as the pubic symphysis. All right, so what two bones does the pubic symphysis join? What two bones? Are you guys shy or did you just forget? The two pubic bones, right? The right and left pubic bones that make up the right and left as coccyx. All right, the last kind of joint by structure is a synovial joint. And so we're going to look at a number of structures of a synovial joint. All synovial joints, all right, are going to be diarthroses, which means what? They're all going to be freely movable joints. All right, so these are really special joints. They got to have special features so that bones can move with respect to each other without grinding the bones down. You want to protect the epiphyses of the bones, right, if they're going to be moving with respect to each other. So here is a really nice exam figure. It shows you generally what a synovial joint looks like. So all synovial joints have these different components, and some have even another component to it, which is I see on the next slide. Okay. So here we have, okay, the proximal bone of the joint and then the distal bone of the joint, and covering the epiphyses so that the bones don't grind each other away is what? Articular cartilage. What kind of cartilage is articular cartilage? It's hyaline cartilage, right? And you have a little picture in your mind of what hyaline cartilage looks like. No fibers, very translucent. And what kind of cells does it have in there? It has chondrocytes within lacunae. And when you were looking at hyaline cartilage, did you ever see any blood vessels in there? No, it's devoid of blood vessels. So hyaline cartilage, guess what? Does not repair itself when it's damaged, right? So that's one unfortunate thing about articular cartilage. Don't like to damage it. Okay, and this hyaline cartilage is continuous with this layer that's going to make up the joint. We call this the synovial membrane. And this is the deepest layer of the articular capsule. And the synovial membrane is kind of a special tissue. It does have some blood vessels. It secretes synovial fluid into the joint, right? And this is what we call the joint cavity right here. So there's synovial fluid in the joint cavity that comes from the synovial membrane, and that synovial fluid brings in just enough oxygen and nutrients to keep those chondrocytes alive, all right? So it just kind of weeps into the cavity. And you know what? In the joint cavity right here, we don't really have a bursa. But I'm going to mention that. I'm going to get back to a bursa in just a little bit. Okay, let's just focus on the joint, and then I'll talk about a bursa. And there's something similar to a bursa called a tendon sheath. Okay, so yeah, we'll get to that. There's a lot of similarities. All right, so that fluid, that synovial fluid, is kind of watery, but it's also kind of acts like a little bit of a gelatin. And guess what happens if you don't use this joint right here? If you immobilize a joint, guess what happens to this synovial fluid? it kind of solidifies. It turns into more like a gel rather than a water material. But if you use this joint, right, you have what? More of a slippery, watery material here that gel converts into a more watery material, and then it's easier to use that joint. So even if somebody has arthritis where they're missing some of this hyaline cartilage on either end of the bone right here, guess what's always recommended for people that have arthritis when it hurts to move? That you should move these joints, because if you don't, what happens to that synovial fluid? It has a tendency to solidify, which makes what? Movement even more difficult. Okay, so that's sort of interesting that that happens, right? So the proper kind of motion is really important. Not to overdo it, not to wear down the cartilage even more, but you've got to use these joints to keep them healthy. All right. Well, that synovial membrane is really, really thin, and it can tear pretty easily. So superficial to the synovial membrane is a fibrous capsule, which is tougher. All right. And guess what kind of material that fibrous capsule is made out of? It's a connective tissue. It is dense, but it's irregular. It's dense, irregular connective tissue. All right, so the synovial membrane and the fibrous capsule are married together, and that's what we call the articular capsule. All right, so the articular capsule helps maintain the integrity of this synovial cavity or joint cavity. All right, then, on the outside of all of that, superficial to that, there are stabilizing ligaments that go from the proximal bone down to the distal bone. And remember, what is a bone-to-bone connection called? That's a what? It says right there. What is that? That's a ligament, right? So bone-to-bone connection is a ligament. And what kind of tissue is a ligament? That is dense, regular connective tissue, right? So these ligaments have collagen that are oriented in parallel sheets from superior to inferior. So this kind of structure basically just doesn't stretch in an anterior-posterior dimension, okay, because it's so strong. Well, what happens if you bend this joint inappropriately to where now you stretch the ligament from side to side? Guess what's going to happen? You're going to separate those fibers out, and it's very easy to damage this ligament when that happens, right? Like, for instance, when you sprain an ankle or something, what are you doing to your ankle? You're using that joint in a way that it's not designed to bend, and that puts tension on the ligaments in ways that a ligament isn't designed to withstand that tension, and those ligaments then can rip very easily. Okay. And the fibrous capsule and these ligaments are continuous with the periosteum, right? So, and the periosteum has connective tissue in it, right? So that kind of just welds everything together. So this is a general picture that you should have of all kinds of synovial joints. There are a couple synovial joints that have one little additional feature. Yeah? Oh, here, down here? Oh, okay, so I have to show you this in case you want to fill in your notes. What do we got? Articular cartilage, the joint cavity, synovial membrane, okay, synovial fluid, fibrous capsule. The articular capsule is made out of what? The fibrous capsule plus the synovial membrane. The synovial membrane secretes synovial fluid into the joint cavity. Which one am I missing? Give me the number. What number am I missing? What number am I missing on my slide up here? Number four, synovial fluid? Fibrous capsule? Fibrous capsule? I think that's the same thing as the joint capsule. Okay. Fibrous capsule, no, the fibrous capsule plus synovial membrane make the articular, the joint capsule. Fibrous capsule plus synovial membrane make the joint capsule. Okay, these two together. So the fibrous capsule just backs up the synovial membrane so that it doesn't rip. I don't know, I have to go back. Articular capsule, fibrous plus synovial membrane make the joint capsule. All right, so these things, oh, we talked about reinforcing ligaments. All right, joints also contain nerve and blood vessels. Now, what I didn't talk about yet are bursa and tendon sheaths. All right, but before I get to that, I want to talk about one last thing, and that is an articular disc. All right, so where is that at? Okay, next slide. A couple joints in your body, okay, have some fibrous cartilage within the joint cavity, and we call that an articular disc. And the joints that have, a couple joints that have articular discs would be the knee, and in the knee, that fibrocartilage is called a meniscus. And also the TMJ has an articular disc as well. Where's the TMJ? Yeah, between the, that's the temporomandibular joint. There's an articular disc in there as well. So that's a little bit more complicated kind of joint than what we usually realize. All right, so it's got all the other components like the synovial membrane and the fibrous capsule. All right, it's got articular cartilage, and what kind of fluid is in the joint cavity right here? That's synovial fluid secreted by the synovial membrane. But this articular disc just stabilizes the joint so that it moves in the proper way. Right? And it's fibrocartilage, so it's relatively tough, but it still can be damaged, right, if too much trauma is applied to it. All right, so let's now consider bursa and tendon sheaths. And the best way to think of these is by going back and looking at what a typical synovial joint looks like. All right, there's a cavity, and what's inside this cavity? Synovial fluid, which should be really nice and slippery. All right, and it's secreted by a synovial membrane, and then there's a fibrous capsule around it. And the job of this joint capsule right here with synovial fluid in it is to reduce inflammation and friction. Right, so whenever you have certain parts of your body where you have either muscles or tendons that are going to move over the surface of a bone or move over a muscle, sometimes your body places a special little pillow to absorb that trauma, that friction, that rubbing to reduce the inflammation, and that's called a bursa. Right, and that bursa has a cavity filled with synovial fluid, is lined with a synovial membrane that secretes the synovial fluid, and it has a fibrous capsule around it, and it just acts like a pillow protecting a couple bones or maybe a tendon and a muscle or a bone and a tendon that are going to bang up against each other, and that prevents inflammation. All right. Now, why is that a good thing? Because when some part of your body, like let's say we didn't have a bursa, like the subacromial bursa between this ligament and the head of the humerus, if this wasn't here, right, whenever you were to move your shoulder, this coracoacromial ligament would bang up against the head of the humerus and it would become inflamed. Well, what happens to tissue when it becomes inflamed? It swells up. And as it swells up, what happens to the rubbing of this ligament with this bone down here? It increases, right? There's less room to move around, right? So if these things are rubbing more on each other, what happens to that inflammatory process? It gets more inflamed, which means what? More rubbing, which produces what? More inflammation, right? So that sounds really bad because under those circumstances, what? The inflammation is never going to go away. It's only going to get worse, right? So these bursa right here are positioned in various parts of your body so that inflammatory process never gets started, so that these things can move nice and freely with respect to each other. So this would be a bursa between a ligament, for instance, and the bone that reduces inflammation. A tendon sheath is basically exactly the same thing, but you see it wrapped around. It's a special pillow that's what? Wrapped around a tendon so that this tendon can move with respect, for instance, to the head of the humerus right here without causing inflammation. All right, but that doesn't mean that you can't perform some activity so rigorously or so often that you don't overdo and traumatize this bursa. Okay, and when you do that, what happens to the bursa? It swells up. It gets inflamed, which does what? Which produces even more inflammation. So it swells up even more. And what do we call that process?
Bursitis.
That's called bursitis. That's a very painful circumstance. And then the only thing left that you can do is just to rest that joint, let that inflammation go away. Or perhaps, okay, you can use some kind of cortisone, a membrane stabilizer, an anti-inflammatory, to reduce the inflammation in this bursa or this tendon sheath right here. And sometimes they actually have to inject cortisone into these structures to reverse that inflammatory process that's taking place. Oh, I guess if it gets so bad, you maybe even have to suck some of the fluid out of that particular bursa, which you call aspiration. That's right, when you suck it out with a needle, that is aspiration. Question? That should make it feel better very quickly. Yeah, very, very quickly. Some people have chronic bursitis and they might have to get a couple injections a year. But there probably is a limit as to how many you can get. It might be 2 a year. I was thinking 3. Yeah. 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 All right, so that's it for today. So next time, I want to go over joints again because that's a pretty complicated topic. So probably, what is today, Wednesday? Over the weekend, read the joint chapter, do the joint homework, and that will help it sink in. And you can look online for these other interactive materials I have. Okay, the lectures are, you know, they're not on Blackboard, but maybe I'll put a link. It's on my website. It's SEM. Yeah. Maybe I'll show you real quick.
Yeah. I also come in all with my text and I go over it.